Hey guys, and welcome to episode 46 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, this episode is a little different because it's not me interviewing someone. It's not me doing a monologue and rambling on for sort of 30 minutes. This one is me being interviewed by Chetna. Now, Chetna works for the East Bay Behaviour Therapy Centre. And Chetna asked to interview me for their blog. And, you know, I'm happy to help and share and answer any questions I can. And Chetna does ask me some brilliant questions, which really got me thinking. And I asked her afterwards if I could share the video to publish on YouTube and iTunes and obviously Android podcast apps, so you guys could hear it as well. Now, the written version will be on the East Bay website, and I'll put the links in the show notes to that, so please go check it out. And also the other blogs that Chetna and Patricia have done. Some really good content up there. And but yeah, in this episode, Chetna asked me questions such as, what is a day in the life of me? I'm not sure how interesting that is for you guys, but maybe it is. And ROCD, relationship OCD, my take on that, advice for sufferers, sorry, co-sufferers, so the people dating people with ROCD, and how to help and protect yourself there. Motivation in recovery from OCD and general mental health. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed answering these questions. There were some really good questions there, ones I've never been asked before or even thought about myself. So it was a pleasure to speak with Chetna. And as always, this episode is sponsored by the guys at No OCD. The new update is coming out very soon. And I also have an episode with Stephen again, which will be on the podcast in a couple of weeks. But yeah, please go check those guys out. Download the app. It's free. And they donate some money to an OCD charity if you do it for the link on the OCDstories.com website, which will be in the show notes of this episode. And you will hear in my conversation with Chetna that I have decided to put more into the OCD stories, more into the podcast, more into running of the website, growing it, reaching more people, supporting more people. And one way I've done that is created a couple courses, like the 30-day course, which, you know, about 40, 50 people are currently doing, and that will be live on the 1st of December if you didn't get a chance to take part in November. I also have a course on relationship OCD as well, and the links will be in the show notes to those if you think they could help you. But as you're here in my chat, you know, I have dropped to 2 days a week so I can support more people, help more people, produce more content, and make a bigger impact, which is where I want to be spending my time. So if this podcast, the website, has helped you anyway and you want to make a donation, you can at theocdstories.com/donate. That's theocdstories.com/donate. And any donations will help me into, you know, paying for the podcast, running, spending more time on it so I can get better guests, I can produce better content, better videos on YouTube, and hopefully make an improved impact on your life and continue to serve you in that way. But as always, regardless whether you donate or not, thank you so much for your time, support, and I really am glad that you let me have an impact in your life. It's a real honor and privilege of mine. Now, here is the interview with Chetna, and I really hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
Yeah, we just had a couple questions for you.
Ask away. I'm an open book. So.
Okay, cool. Well, first of all, what is a day in the life of Stu?
Wow. It depends which day you, you catch me on. So I'm half my time is on the OCD stories and half my time is still in my traditional job, my first job I trained in, which was marketing.
Interesting.
So, and then actually one day a week, I'm also doing a master's degree in mental health.
Wow. Okay.
So that covers...
You're busy.
Yeah, extremely busy.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but I've had to learn how to deal with stress.
No kidding.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I like it. I've always been one to keep busy. I'm not one to kind of do nothing in the evenings. But yeah, no, it's good. So it's either growing the podcast and the website and outreach and stuff like that, or doing studies or kind of paying the bills.
Okay. Great. It almost seems like OCD Stories is like a full-time production. Do you do all of the aspects of it on your own?
Yeah, I do everything myself. So The only
That's
thing,
insane.
yeah, the only thing I didn't do was the sort of the initial logos and stuff like that. The maintenance of the website, the podcast, getting the guests, interview questions, getting the episodes ready to go live, and then sort of the social media management is also under my control at the minute.
Whoa. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's a lot.
Yeah, it
That's
is,
pretty
yeah.
fantastic. Very cool. And you said you're getting a master's in mental health.
Yes, it's mental health psychological therapies. So the
Okay.
first kind of semester is all looking at sort of safeguarding clients, managing risk around suicide and things like that, diagnosis. And then the
Wow.
second half will be all in the different psychological therapies for treating the various DSM diagnoses or ICD as we use in Europe.
Right.
But
Okay.
I've actually got it here. That's a smaller DSM, but.
Oh, that one's a cute one.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, so
Why would
that's.
you have to refer?
Sorry,
Sorry,
go on.
what do you reference the DSM?
So yeah, so I've actually there's the ICD,
Okay.
and then there's the big
Yep.
DSM.
Wow.
I only bought these actually for a piece of coursework I was doing, and I needed to kind of look at the DSM classification for something, but although. Obviously, it's the American manual. We still y use it and reference it over here in the UK.
Okay.
Yeah, but we also have to use the ICD. They're very
Yes.
similar,
Do
but
not have to.
yeah.
Okay. Well, very cool. That's really impressive and inspiring that you do all of that yourself. And I really do appreciate too that you discuss relationships in OCD. That's been a topic that we've really tried to cover too, because of course, that's a huge part of life, relationships, and OCD can be such a huge barrier. Any mental illness can be such a huge barrier in connection. Can you describe? I think you have an episode with your girlfriend, right?
Yeah, fiance now.
Okay, fiance,
Yeah, thank you.
congratulations. That's exciting. Can you describe the moment when you told her? And I'm sorry if you discussed
Yeah.
this in a podcast that.
I don't know if we did discuss it. Yeah, I can tell you, absolutely. So it must have been, I can't remember, early on, I must have told her around that I had OCD. And I can't remember how I did it, but we've always been very open with each other, and I think it
Okay.
was easy because she had clinical depression, so
Okay.
she fully understood how the mind can screw someone over.
Sure.
So from her part, there was never going to be any judgment. So I felt completely at ease to share, what I had been
Okay.
going through. And then with I can't honestly remember how I approached the relationship side of things. I just vaguely remember when I did, I kind of said, it's not about you. It's just what the OCD is targeting. And then as the dialogue progressed over various months, I'd kind of say, don't reassure me if I seek reassurance, because that isn't going to help me. And we came to agreements on that. It's still tough, and I'm majority of the way through it now, but there's still the odd occasion that it catches me out.
Of
But
course.
yeah, she's good at being supportive and understanding.
Right. And I'm sure it's like a likewise situation, like vice versa, of
Yeah,
course.
she's still, although she doesn't really have depression anymore, she it seems to have morphed into general anxiety. So where and ironically, around she doesn't have relationship OCD, but she has relationship anxiety.
I see.
So it's kind of almost funny from my point of view, seeing almost looking in a mirror. So I know sometimes she can really freak out in terms from an anxiety point of view, and I know how to deal with it and not take it personally as well, which
Yeah.
I think would be the hardest thing for a co-sufferer, someone with relationship OCD, is they don't necessarily know how to. Oh no, that's not. I'm not explaining myself. I personally, if I didn't have OCD and my partner did, and they were the OCD was targeting me as their obsession, I would probably be quite hurt by it because you feel this person's unsure if they love you, whether they find you funny, or whatever the flaw is they're picking on. But I think what helped me was I know that it's anxiety fueled, and I know in 2 days or a week's time, it will be everything will be okay. So I think that's what's hard for those who haven't experienced that, is to not take it personally, if
Right.
but that's easier said than done. But yeah.
No, that makes sense. It does. So do you and your fiance practice mindfulness together?
No, she doesn't really do anything for recovery. is in she does like she's big on art, so she'll make time for art. It's a way of expressing herself and then relaxing her mind. And she started cycling more, but from a mindfulness point of view, and meditation, it's not something she's ever gotten into. Meditation is something that massively helped me learn to kind of see my thoughts as something outside of me, that all meaningless, and not to attach to them. And mindfulness is something I practice more still day to day, is whenever I get a chance, washing up or just going for a walk somewhere, I try and be mindful of sounds, noises, touch, etc. That seems to make a difference.
And that's been a daily practice for you?
It has. It hasn't been when I haven't been meditating recently, but when I did meditate, I did it consistently for a long time. And that was a sort of a set daily practice. But with mindfulness, it is daily, but it's just whenever. It's usually whenever I've got some time, I'm not doing anything, but I'm also using that time. So, for example, if I'm walking from the London Underground to back home, which is like a 20-minute walk, I use that time to be mindful.
Sure, that's
Yeah.
great. And that's so much more sometimes accessible to everybody than
Absolutely.
meditation. You
Yeah.
know, we can be mindful at any time
Yeah.
while driving, while waiting in line, anytime. That's great.
Absolutely. And yeah, with meditation, you're somewhat, you're especially with OCD, if you're quiet, then the thoughts are more likely to come on strong, and some people struggle to cope with that. Whereas mindfulness, you're not necessarily just observing thoughts, you're consciously paying attention to it. It could be your body or your breath, which I find is a bit more controllable for someone with OCD.
Cool. And what I meant to ask you when we were talking about you going to school, are you hoping to also be a therapist in this work
Yeah. Well,
beyond
yeah.
what you're already done with what you're doing with OCD stories?
Yeah, so the original plan was, I didn't really know. I just knew I wanted to further my education in this field. And I wasn't sure if it was research or therapy I wanted to go down. And although I love research and investigating into something, I just can't deal with all the policies and protocols around doing research. I'm not a stickler for that. So, therapy is definitely more tailored to me, I feel. So yeah, after the masters, I then have to do a kind of conversion into counselling training, and then I can apply to register. So it's a long journey, becoming a therapist in the UK, but yeah.
Wait, so schooling is how long? Like 2 years plus?
Well, yeah, so you've got to do your undergraduate degree, usually in psychology or something like that. I didn't, obviously. I did my undergraduate in media. I then did a master's in marketing, when I
Oh,
went,
wow.
and I finished at 22. I'm 29 now, so it was a 7-year gap. So I had my career in marketing, and so now, so basically, but assuming I did a sort of a BSc in psychology, you'd then go on to, you could go straight away to do your counselling course, like a postgraduate diploma, which could be 2 to 3 years, and then in theory you're a licensed counsellor or therapist. But the only issue is you then have to do an additional year or 2 years in CBT if you want to be a licensed
Oh,
cognitive behavioural therapist.
wow.
Yeah, I mean you
There's that
can
distinction. Interesting.
absolutely. The NHS has a it's called IAPT, which is Improved Access to Psychological Therapies. Which basically means you don't need to be a therapist or a counselor already. You can go through this program, and because they wanted to get more people ready doing CBT, but I'm not sure if you can then go and be a private therapist or if you have to be part of the NHS.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in total, it's about
Yeah, that's
six years.
probably fair.
Yeah, that's a
Yeah. Yeah.
long process. Here, it's
Although,
about
yeah, so go
four
four,
for
yeah.
full time. 2 years of a master's and then about 2 years at 40 hours a week to get your hours for licensure. That's insane. Interesting. Well, all right, here's another question for you.
Cool.
Out of all of the people that you've interviewed for OCD Stories, who have you been the most nervous about interviewing?
That's a good question. Do you know, I get nervous for everyone. It never gets easy. Like being interviewed to me is far less nerve-wracking than doing the interview.
Oh,
I don't know why, but Steve Hayes was probably quite nerve-wracking because he was my fourth interview, I believe,
okay.
and he's obviously kind of legendary in the field of psychology and research. So I was definitely nervous about that, but he was a very nice guy and soon kind of appeased any of my worries. Episode number two, probably because it was also an early episode, but that was Bob Berg, who is a New York Times bestselling author. He's just suffer of OCD, but I found that quite nervous because his book had made a big impact on my life. And
And what book was that?
it's called The Go Giver.
The Go Giver.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's a fable about in business, basically just kind of giving first and then you receive as opposed to trying to receive first.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a huge, it seems a huge theme in your work. Like I hear, especially in your latest podcast about sharing like tips, four tips and how much you want to empower your listeners. Like I really hear that. And I just listened to your podcast with Jeff Bell talking about, service to others being the prime, like a big motivator in recovery. Do you get that a lot? I guess it's a two-part question. Like I could tell that OCD and this topic is a passion of yours because you're studying it now and you have a project that you own fully around spreading so much awareness. Like, is service a big part of your motivation and your recovery consistency?
Definitely. I would say that the second part about service helping my recovery was definitely when I was really struggling. Service became a real way to me to focus on something other than myself. And OCD is very much focused on the self, and helping others can help you take. As with any trouble in life, if you're ever going through a tough time in life, if you just reach out and help someone else less fortunate than you, it just seems to lift everything. And then now I just. Reading various books like Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, all books about meaning and purpose, and all I ever wanted was to have kind of a life of meaning, more so than happiness. The Dr. Russ Harris talks about the happiness trap. I don't know if you've read that book. And I stopped pursuing a life of happiness, and I just wanted to live a life of meaning. And happiness comes from meaning for me, at least. And I find it, so I haven't got anything in it, but there's this, you can see it, a book of
Oh, nice.
faith. So I get occasional email from people saying how the podcast has helped them. And that to me is really what keeps me going, in the sense of it's just so rewarding to know others are doing better in life, or maybe they're happier or living a more meaningful life because of something you did. And that definitely motivates me to kind of do it each day.
And I bet you've got a lot. I'm sorry.
As of anyone who is a therapist or trained to be a therapist, they're always kind and caring people, which is why I get on with everyone I've interviewed, because they are living a life of service. If it was about, I mean, you can make good money being a therapist, but if it was just about money, you definitely wouldn't be a therapist. You'd do something else. There's better ways to make even more money. But they all want to help, and that's kind of in me, is just being a service to someone else.
And I'm sure you get a lot of messages from viewers about how your stories have impacted them. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, a lot of people say, kind of at the start of their journey, they came across the podcast and it made them realize it was OCD, and that encouraged them to go get help, which is brilliant. Other ones kind of encouraged them to try a different therapy, like ACT, acceptance commitment therapy, which is now helping them, or even commit to ERP because they were struggling with it. I had one person message me the other day saying I'm the reason why they're still alive, which
Whoa.
was, yeah, quite deep, but really touching, obviously.
No kidding.
Yeah, so
That's
it's,
great.
yeah,
That's a huge motivator, I'm sure.
absolutely.
So do you ever get sick of talking about OCD? Like, do you ever just not want to talk about it or read about it or?
Yeah, quite a bit. No, in the sense of if you're doing anything in life, you need to detach, and that's part of living a health mentally healthy life. So I'm very good. When I first started doing it, I was bad at doing that, and now I have more ground rules where I know what time I'm allowing myself to work, and then I cut off at that point. And I'll go and, I don't know, play the Xbox or see a friend or go for a run. And I make sure the weekend, I still work on the weekend and stuff around it, but I make sure I have block times where I see someone or I go play basketball, whatever it is. Because it's important to completely detach in life. And then I come back, and this is the thing that came clear, 6 months ago, was when I allow myself time to play, so to speak. Where I'm not thinking about anything, I then get new ideas while I'm sort of in this play mode, because the brain's got that space to create something meaningful. Whereas if you're just thinking all the time, it has no room. But yeah, I don't know. I'm finding it fascinating. My course is barely about OCD, actually. It's largely about the more the psychosis and schizophrenia, which is not something I want to go into or go into treating, but it's fascinating. So I think that's also a break as well. So I can take stuff from that and apply it to OCD, but also it's different,
Yeah,
which helps.
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what you are studying or what you're offering too can apply to anxiety and depression as well. But yeah, maybe not psychosis.
No.
Probably.
Well, in saying
Well,
that, we had two sort of schizophrenics, or two people with schizophrenia, I should say,
there we go.
who came in and gave a lecture yesterday to us, and they're both well into recovery. One who is, you would almost say, is cured, and that's something you would never really say for a schizophrenic, as far as I'm aware. I mean, I'm still learning about it, but you especially would never, as far as I'm aware, if you have schizophrenia, you're on medication for life. Because there's no real set treatments. There's various ones that you can use to help with schizophrenia, but none that, like, ERP is the gold standard for OCD, let's say. There isn't that for schizophrenia yet, or they haven't found it. So usually they're on medication for life, and both these people had come off medication, and one hadn't been back into sort of the psychiatric unit within the NHS for 10 years. He runs his own business, he's a minister.
Yeah. Isn't that how schizophrenia works, though? Like, it kind of sets in like mid-20s or 20s, like pretty late in life. And then it lasts for a number of years and then it sort of just wanes off.
Yeah, I'm still learning about that. I'm not too sure, but yeah, from all I know is they usually say you're on it for life. It's kind of maintaining it. And here's two people that are kind of, one's heavily got it under control, and the other one has effectively beaten it. And he talks about kind of his attitude of he always wanted more, as in he always knew he was better than this. If that makes sense, I don't want to come across wrong. But he didn't want to be stuck in the system, the mental health care system in the UK, where he keeps taking drugs, he keeps endless therapy, and he's just depending on the system. He wanted to get out of the system. And he obviously did the stuff he needed to eventually get to the point where he felt he didn't need medication. But he said it was the things you can't measure in like a randomized control study that helped him more than anything. So it was the person, it was the therapist or the mental health nurse that gave him hope and told him, you know, it was possible to recover and things like this. And I remember he said, this shook me a bit. He said, there was one point, for whatever reason, he couldn't even zip up his flies on his trousers. Mm-hmm. And his brother had to do it for him. And his brother said to him, Paul, you will rise again. And he basically, yeah, he holds it to this day. He remembers that when he felt like there was no hope, that one thing told him, you know, to keep going, to keep trying. And yeah, it's powerful things like that that apply to OCD because, yeah, it's almost, I don't want to say it's harder, but in a way, OCD is far more treatable at this time than schizophrenia. Yeah. So taking that example, if you're an OCD sufferer, should be heavily motivating.
No kidding. Yeah. And with that example too, the relational aspect of recovery was very important. And the people who contributed to instilling that hope in him. For you, Stu, what was your most, would you say relationally, that was a big part of your recovery as well? Or I know your research was also a big part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah, the community's huge. And he gives other examples about how getting meaningful friendships really helped him as well and building that. But yeah, for me, yeah, like connecting with people who had OCD, and I saw a sort of a peer support coach to start with, who he himself had overcome OCD. And he worked with me on acceptance commitment therapy and things like that. And that helped massively because when I expressed, he could relate to me, and he knew what I was going through because he had been through it. That sort of connection was big for me. And the community, like, so building the OCD stories, just connecting with people, and I was far more engaged in the community, for example, on Twitter or in Facebook support groups than I am now because of my time. But being in that really helped me connect with others. Yeah, I think it's heavily important. And the last sort of year and a half, I've made more of an effort in my own friendship circles to spend more time with people and make more of an effort to see people, because I realize the importance that has on just general mental health, whether you have a diagnosable illness or not.
Sure. Yeah. Awesome. A little bit about the word cure. And I know you mentioned that I believe you mentioned it in a podcast that you don't care for the word too much. But do you think you could be cured from OCD or depression or anxiety even?
Yeah. Depression, absolutely. And the reason I say that is because I've seen many people who have been depressed who can come out of it and don't really ever get it again, assuming they do the things to kind of maintain their mental health. But then also they can kind of maintain it for 10 years and then they might get a relapse, which obviously isn't cure, it's just prevention. With OCD, it depends what you mean cure, because if you mean it's gone forever, you never have any intrusive thoughts or anything like that, then I don't believe anyone is ever going to be cured, because everyone has intrusive thoughts. You know, whether you have OCD or not, you get intrusive thoughts. The difference is someone with OCD latches onto that intrusive thought, puts importance on it, and it becomes scary. Obviously, they're not choosing to do this. The reason I don't like the word cure is because I think it paralyzes people, because they realize there isn't a cure, so what's the point? And it's, you can, that's why I like the word recovery, because it's about living a good life, a mentally well life, and that's beyond OCD. So that's, you know, making sure you improve your confidence, making sure you work on your self-esteem, and all these areas that make a meaningful life. You can beat OCD, but if you haven't worked on self-esteem, confidence, your life is still going to be small. It's bigger than OCD. And you can beat OCD to the point where it doesn't bother you. Or maybe there's the odd thought comes up and you have to quickly, you know, apply some acceptance strategies or expose yourself to something, and you can get rid of it maybe in the matter of 10 minutes. And you might have to do that once a week. So when you look at it from that point of view, it's kind of, why do you want more than that? You can live an exceptionally good life. And the thing that Steve Hayes said to me, which really stuck out, was he said, if you have a mental illness, you're the lucky ones. Which is quite a bold statement, but what he meant by that was, is in recovery, you get to learn all these tools, all these strategies, like ERP, you learn how to face your fears. What a great lesson for life generally. In acceptance commitment therapy, you get how to learn to accept thoughts you don't like. Again, a great lesson for life, because you're going to get thoughts of self-esteem where your brain tells you you're not good enough. And in that, you can apply what you learned for OCD and say, well, that doesn't matter because I'm still going to try it, whatever it is. And when you slowly start to remove your diagnosis and overcome whatever it is, you're left far stronger than people who never had to go through that kind of pain.
Cool. I'm feeling very empowered right now, like fully. That's about half an hour, and that's all the time I'll take of yours, but I really appreciate the conversation
Yeah,
and
no, I appreciate it.
information.
Yeah, no, thank you for reaching out as well and interviewing me. It's always nice to test my knowledge.
Cool. Well, I'll be writing this up in a blog, and then I'm happy to share it with you. And yeah, thanks a lot.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, thanks,
So
Chetna.
there you have it.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Chetna. She asked me some brilliant questions, which I thoroughly enjoyed answering them. Please go check them out, which is Chetna and Patricia at East Bay Behavioural Therapy Centre. And also check out the blog, where they've got lots of great articles on OCD and other things to do with recovery. And as mentioned at the start, if you would like to donate, go to theocdstories.com/donate. And thank you in advance for all your support over the last 40-something episodes, and nearly hitting 50. I love the feedback I get from you guys, and I will continue to do this and hopefully help you make a difference in your lives. Speak to you soon.